right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and I've got John Bobbert on the phone. Today is a very special day. Today is the day we actually interview Ron Hansen. He is the guy that came in first place in the build and burn and first place overall in the first, I'm not even going to say annual because it's not even annually, but the first Adonis Index Transformation Contest. And there are a couple of really interesting things that popped up. But before we get to those, don't forget that we're doing a teleseminar coming up on Wednesday, and the basis behind it is going to be muscle building. So you're going to need to go check out 8poundsleanmass.com. Go watch the video that Brad Pilon did where he gained 8 pounds of lean mass in just one crazy workout.
Is that 8 pounds spelled the whole word pounds or LBS?
8lbsleanmass.com.
And the character 8, not the word 8.
Yep, character okay. 8. Yep, 8 as in number, LBS. leanmass.com. And yep, check out that video. Go ahead and put in your stuff. As we speak, as we're recording this right now, there are about 1,400 people who are ready to check this out. Right now, we've only got 2,000 lines. We will probably have to go get more lines. So that kind of costs money. So if you're not going to show up, you know, don't opt in. Just kind of say that because, you know, you're taking somebody else's spot. So anyway, Back on the rants. So, John, what's the deal with today, man? What are some of the key elements that we cover in this interview, actually, that Ron more or less covers for us?
Well, Ron brings up a couple really good ones. One of them is the idea of having a specific – you have to specify your goal if in order for anyone around you to give you any support. You know, it's kind of like the difference between me saying, I want to get in shape versus I want to lose 4 pounds in the next 4 weeks. If I just say I want to get in shape, it's pretty hard for you to like support me on that because you don't know what I need, what I don't need. But if I specifically say I want to lose 4 pounds in 4 weeks, and then I have a rough plan to do it, then it's a lot easier for someone to give me some support and help me along. So that's a really key point. I mean, we know social support is important, but the goal is important for the support. And then I guess the other thing to really listen for is, after Ron made his transformation and won the contest, people around you are going to react differently. Like people around him reacted differently, and you got to remember, Ron, and Ron brings it up a good way, that it's not about you, it's about them. Like the way a person reacts to a change you're making is actually, it's them responding to their feelings about seeing you change. So it's interesting, and it's something that you won't, unless you go through a change, you won't experience it. But as soon as you go through a transformation, everything's different. The way everyone reacts to you is different, and you have to remember that they're not, their reaction is a lot to do with how they feel about themselves seeing you change. So those are two really big things that come out of this one.
Yeah, definitely sounds good. So, like I say, listen into those key points. Don't forget to register for the teleseminar before you leave today. And that being said, once again, it's time for another interview from one of our winners. I've got Ron Hansen on the phone. He is our first overall winner for the whole contest. So he actually showed some pretty significant results. And again, as always, I've got Barbin on the phone. So we're going to kind of go fast and furious and have some fun and kind of find out, you know, what it took for Ron to win this thing. Because, you know, we all want to find out what winners do. So Ron, tell me something real quick. Where are you from, buddy?
I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay, very cool. And how old are you right now?
I am 40.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And yeah. And how long have you been working out in the past? I mean, what kind of workouts did you do? You know, what were your overall goals? Just kind of some basic history of where you were kind of coming from in that regard.
Well, during high school I ran cross country. Didn't do a whole lot of working out, did a little bit of martial arts back then. But really what happened about 3.5 years ago, I joined the police force. And it was during the academy that I really started working out. And when I started out, I was 250 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And during my academy training, I dropped down to 230 pounds. When I graduated, it was a 14-week course to get me ready to work for the state prison here. Uh-huh. And I decided when I graduated that I was not going to let myself get back to that point where I was overweight and unhappy and just basically miserable. The other thing that happened is I went through a divorce about that same time, so the gym was really my sanctuary. Uh-huh. And it's just where I went to just feel like I had some control over what was going on in my life. And and I really didn't have a whole lot of, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of like direction as far as what I wanted to look like. One of the podcasts y'all were talking about training versus working out. I was just mm-hmm. working out.
Okay. So and just kind of.
And Ron, okay. How tall are you?
I am 6'1".
Okay, so you're I just want people to be able to put in perspective how big you are. Like 6'1" at 250, that's a big man.
Yeah, I was a big boy.
Yeah, right. I can actually kind of take a. You know, feel you a little bit because I think we've all been through situations and things like that where, you know, things aren't going to the best or in life, I guess you could say. And I agree. I mean, I kind of hunkered down in the gym a little bit, and I'm not gonna say I took my aggressions out, but it's true. It's like this is the one part of my life that's kind of a rock right now where I actually have control over what's going on. So yeah, I definitely understand that. So what kind of workouts were you doing during that time period?
Oh, I was doing body weight. I did a lot of body weight stuff, mm-hmm. Cause I thought that was, you know, I got sucked into the whole functional strength training. Mm-hmm. I also did some bodybuilding type workouts. You know, I got sucked into that whole thing with the magazines and trying to figure out the best workouts that, you know, just all that crazy stuff that was going on, you know, and I changed my workout up every couple of weeks and it was frustrating because I kind of knew what I wanted, and I just wasn't seeing the results that I wanted to get, you know, and the whole eating thing, you know, I was eating the 6 meals a day and you know, because they were telling me you need to eat like 3,500 calories in order to build muscle, and I was stuck for, I'd say 2 years at 220 pounds. It wasn't mm-hmm. until the contest and Eat Stop Eat where I really started figuring things out.
Right, gotcha. You know, the funny thing, and John and I talk about this sometimes when we're just kind of shooting the breeze on the phone, but it seems like, and you're kind of verifying this, at least in your life and from your perspective, that you know, people decide to get in shape from an event-based thing. So something happens in their life, like a divorce or something. So they're already kind of emotionally charged. And you've got all the magazines trying to pack you with all this, you know, fly-by-night information. And not only do you not know what to believe, but you kind of believe everything because you need to believe something. And so
right. You
kind of get stuck in that rut like you were talking about. I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, it's not like you're coming into the situation with a clear head where you can kind of go through everything and kind of look and disseminate and say, yeah, well, that makes sense. That doesn't make sense. Most people, they really start working out because something happened to them. You know, they got pushed in the elevator, or, you know, somebody disrespected them, or they broke up with their girlfriend, or somebody treated them wrong. Or it was something like that, something event based. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's, yeah, okay. I was going to say it's interesting that you brought that up. So how did you find out about us and kind of what we're doing?
I actually found out about you through, it was a complete accident, actually. I was doing some research. I was at work one day and I was thinking about my nutrition plan. And I thought, you know, this just isn't working. There's something that's just not working. And so when I got home from work that morning, I got on my computer and I started Googling different things and I'd read some things on fasting a little bit, but nothing real significant. And then I stumbled upon Eat Stop Eat. And then a couple of days later, as I was going through some of the stuff like that, I come across the Adonis Index and your guys' stuff. And at first I was a little skeptical because I was like, you know, I've spent so much money on magazines and different things. And things like that, but I kept coming back to it. It's like it just kept popping up in my head, you know that you guys maybe had what I needed, and I got Eat Stop Eat. I started fasting. I started feeling really good about the direction things were going, and I just went from there.
Right. So what was kind of the final, not straw, but the thing where you just kind of suspended any disbelief about what we were doing? You're just like, you know what, man, I'm in.
I actually decided about 3 or 4 days before I got the email about the sale that you guys were having just before the contest. Mm-hmm. And I had decided that I was in. I'd listened to, I believe I was listening to one of the podcasts and just you and John, just you guys just take care of us, you know, and that's what really made me jump in. It's just that it was great to have the support of the guys that were actually running the show and knew what the hell they were doing.
Right. So basically the contest itself kind of triggered or was getting close. I mean, you basically started what, maybe a week before the contest started?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So did the contest at all, did that influence you at all? Or what made you decide, or did you decide before you knew about the contest or after?
I'd actually decided before the contest that this is the program that I was going to get.
Okay. And then you basically, what made you decide to jump in the contest?
You know what? I was ready for a change and I just wanted to enter. You know, I was like, I can do this. I need to do something that's completely different and get something that I can focus on and hold on to. Mm-hmm. And just run with.
Gotcha. That's very cool. You got anything to chew on really quick, John?
No, that's just all good stuff. Other people have mentioned that the contest helped added pressure with a deadline and a goal to move towards. Was that something that you were looking for, like an incentive to actually hit something in a time frame? Or I guess it's the challenge, like facing yourself with the challenge. Is that part of what also helped? Ron?
Yeah, absolutely. I had set goals and things like that in the past, and it's like they'd come and go because I wasn't, you know, the only one I was held responsible to was myself, because I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a community of people to get behind and kick me in the ass when I needed it or what have you. And so the forums, the guys on the forums and just chatting with the people, like Burton, he and I, when the contest first started, we were emailing each other a couple times a week, really encouraging each other to give it everything we had. Just having that goal and that timeline, at the end. Mm-hmm. And, it was great. And then it's kind of funny because right at the start, I was talking with my girlfriend about it. And I said, you know, I'm going to enter this contest. And she says, well, that's good. I think you should do that. That's absolutely the right thing for you to do. I said, I don't know if I can win. She goes, I know you can win because you are just so incredibly focused all the time. And I just ran with it. I just jumped on board and she was behind me. You know, it wasn't like, oh, you're spending too much time at the gym. You're doing this, you're doing that. You know, she was very supportive of the days that I was fasting and things like that. She you know, wouldn't be like, well, let's go out to dinner, let's do this or let's do that. It was always, well, what do you need from me to help you move forward? And you know, she never interrupted my workout. She never, you know, anything like that. It was great. The support was great from her as well as from the guys on the site.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I mean, I was actually thinking about doing this, and I hadn't talked to John about it, but you mentioned it, how you were talking to Dave back and forth, you know, via email and stuff like that. I was actually thinking about setting up some type of buddy system within the forums where, you know, you have accountability partners and stuff like that, just kind of one-on-one. So it's really interesting how you guys kind of took the initiative and actually did that. So, and it sounds like that was important for you, not only with him, but with, you know, your significant other, that she was behind it and she was, you know, whatever you need and stuff like that too. And I like the fact that of having contests and stuff, because there's kind of a definitive end to it all. And so I'm sure she could see that it was only going to be 10 weeks where all this stuff would be going on. And then afterwards things would kind of go back to some sort of normal everyday life. But during that time, you know, you were basically just kind of hitting it. So that's really cool.
There's another thing there that Ron touched on that I think needs to be pointed out, is that the support that he got from his girlfriend. This sort of thing happens when you actually pick a defined goal with a deadline that, you know, you publicly declare it. By that I mean, like, you say it to some people, you've declared it in the forums. When you make it real like that, it's a lot easier to garner support from friends, like significant others, family. A lot of people try, you know, do the whole I'm going to get in shape, and it's sort of, yeah, whatever, it never really happens. But when you tell, you know, that's a lot. How do people support you when you just say, well, I just want to lose some weight, or I just want to get in shape? Other people can't even really try to support you because they don't even know what the goal is. Like, if you don't, they don't. But the minute you have, like, a defined goal, like, you know, maybe you're doing a contest, or let's say you just say, by the end of this month, I want to lose 4 pounds, at least people around you are like, oh, okay, I get what the goal is. I see where it ends. Now I know at least how to try to support you. So one of the major issues with trying to change your body is support, because you do need support. But unless you declare a very specific goal, people around you kind of don't know how to support you. So I think that's a huge disconnect that people run into. And Ron, you did a really good job of explaining, you know, that you received the support. And I think a lot of it has to do with just being in the contest in the first place.
Right, right. And having that clear goal, you know, and the AI number to go for, really, really helps everybody understand what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, beyond just general weight loss or general, you know, strength or muscle building.
Yeah, and it helps you focus on it too, because, you know, you can have that vague goal, I want to be in shape, or I want to get huge, or whatever it is. And, you know, without defining what those things are, how are you going to know when you're there?
Exactly.
And it's pretty easy to give up when you're not there, or you don't see where you're going.
Yeah, it's kind of like running around in the dark.
Yeah.
It really is. So walk us through kind of the 10 weeks of the contest, you know, kind of, you know, when to train. Was there anything extra you did on top of the base workouts? I mean, as far as diet, how was that controlled? Because you cut quite a bit.
Yeah, I did, and you know, I didn't even realize how much I had cut until like the last 3 days of the contest. And I started getting ready for the photo shoot, and that's when I really realized that I was like, holy hell, I've completely changed, you know. So the 10 weeks, it was a good start. You know, I'd been doing a lot of, just real heavy lifting in the gym. I was doing a lot of barbell workouts and the core five lifts that all the bodybuilders tell you need to do, you know, squats, deadlifts, bench presses and added some other things. And I was doing that pretty regular, and then switching over to the dumbbell exercises. I just wasn't sure. You know, I wasn't sure because I the gym that I go to, we have pretty limited number of weights. We go up to 75 pounds on the dumbbells. And I was like, I just don't know if I'm going to be able to get the amount of weight that I need to change my body. So, but I was going through the workouts and at first I was like, well, I'm going to substitute a couple exercises here and there. After that first week of being on it, and I got through that first leg day, my hell. You guys are just sadistic. I was, you know, I'd never felt like I wanted to pass out after a leg day before until that first one. And I was like, this is what training is versus working out.
Right.
And I just got hooked. You know, I work nights, for the prison system. So I work from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. So when I work out, you know, 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon after I wake up for the day. So first thing I do, I'd get up, I'd take my creatine, and I'd head straight to the gym. I'd work out for an hour or so. And I really didn't do anything other than just the base workouts. There's a, you know, other than adding in, for my cardio, instead of doing the interval stuff like that, I have a jump rope and I do jump rope training, and I'd throw in my ab workout in between. I'd jump for, you know, 40, 45, 50 jumps, and then I'd drop and I'd do, some ab work. I'd do, sweeps or sit-ups or leg raises or flutter kicks, things like that. So really it was just everything was really just the basic, workout as it's lined up in the system. And then, I added in the, those full body workouts from the burn, about 5 or 6 weeks into it.
Mm-hmm. And how many did you add? Just 1 a week or?
Yeah, just 1 a week usually on Wednesdays. I do that extra workout.
Right. You know, it's funny. John and I predicted, or at least I predicted, I think John agreed with me. I said, whoever follows the program to the T is the person that's going to win. And you know, some of the other guys were kind of, you know, messing around and adding other stuff in and things like that. And you know, you jumped in, you followed it to the T. I mean, you substituted a little bit just because of equipment, but, and you won.
Yeah.
That we kind of predicted that, which was funny because I thought about it. I was like, because I was the same way when John first shipped the workouts over to me. I was like, man, this is just looking at it the way it looks on paper. It just doesn't look like it would do much to you. You're kind of like, man,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I had that same feeling. And then I was thinking about it one day and I was like, you know, I'm just going to follow it the way it's laid out. That's what I'm going to do. And, mm-hmm. and I just completely dedicated myself to doing every lift as hard as I could every single day.
Right. What kind of poundages are you doing? Like for incline, like say incline chest press. Well, I obviously know you kind of go out with 75s with dumbbells, right? Is that as high as it goes?
Yeah, that's as high as it goes right now. You know, on the 5 rep range, I'm just starting to push the 70s.
Okay.
On that.
Gotcha. Yeah, John and I were trying to come up with some type of scale about size and stuff. We were just kind of messing around with it. Because a lot of people don't realize that even though this look we're talking about, it's still a really strong, you're still a strong guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like most of the people in the place aren't going to be able to lift as much as you do. So
that's what I've been noticing is that you know I can actually clear out the free weight area just because I go over there and I pick up the biggest, you know, the bigger dumbbells, and everybody kind of just clears out. It's kind of funny how that happens.
So let's talk about some experiences. I know your girlfriend's been really supportive. I mean, other than that, just being supportive, now that you've got kind of improved yourself, how are things with her? I mean, are things better? I mean,
things with her are really good. You know, it's just some of the things that I've noticed is, you know, it's those little things that you notice, you know, you notice the little looks that you get and the little squeezes.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit more frequent. One thing that's funny is that you know, some of my family, they're like, just the other day we were all together for a get together, and they were all, you're way too skinny. Like, mm-hmm. No, not really. I'm not as skinny as I want to be yet. I'm pretty close, but I still have some work to do. But everybody, I get a lot of people just saying, hey, you know what, you look really, really good. One thing that happened to me the other day, I was at the grocery store getting some stuff for work, and I had this lady. She was, you know, she had to be in her 60s, and she's flirting with me in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of funny. So, you know, I was like, well, you know, she's out here and she's flirting. I might as well flirt back. And so we're standing in the checkout line and we're talking, we're flirting back and forth. And then this girl walks up to her and she says, Mom, what are you doing? She says, well, I'm flirting with this cute guy because you won't.
That's funny.
That's awesome.
Oh man. So did the other girl start flirting with you at that point, or did she just get all bashful and everything?
Yeah, she just got all bashful and she walked out of the store. But it was pretty cool. And then the things at work, I work with the female population here in Utah. So I deal with the female inmates out here. And I've noticed that when I started getting a little bit broader in the shoulder, they changed the way I was, our relationship, our working relationship between me and the inmates changed. It's a lot more respectful. There's a downside to that too. There's also a lot more of the "I wonder what he looks like without his shirt on" type of stares as I'm walking the block.
I never thought I would ever hear anybody say that's a downside, but that's hilarious.
Yeah, on the other side though of when there's a situation out there, I'm the one that they call to come and stand in front of the door. Because I can fill up the doorway and I can get them to do what I need them to do.
That's funny. I'm still giggling about that other thing. What about you, John? You got anything in particular, any type of experiences that you want to try to bring up or anything like that?
No, that was interesting. But the one thing I relate with is when your family said that you look skinny. Like, just give it. No, Sahal, you're 6'1". How much do you weigh right now?
Right now I'm at 191.
Right. That's not a small person.
But, no, it's not.
But think of how ironic that is that there's a group of people that are used to seeing you so much bigger that they look at you and they're like, oh, he's skinny. Like,
yeah.
Like, what, six? Like, I've seen your pictures. You're not small. And that's a look that a lot of people, you've got a good look. And it's just, this is the crab in a bucket. I don't know what this is. It's odd, but people get used to people around them being a certain way, and they have I don't know if they have a hard time. They're just it's just different for them to see you differently, and so in their head how they categorize who Ron is, they're like, oh, Ron's big, and then big as in 235, 250 pounds big. Then when they see you at 190, instead of for a second they're just like, oh, Ron's skinny, and it's not, oh, Ron is in great shape. He's just not what I remember him. And that same thing happens to me. I'm about 182 right now, but I used to be, 215, and I'm 6 feet tall. So I was quote big at 215, but now they're like, oh, you're skinny. And I'm like, well, not really. I kind of like this look better than that look, and it's a familiarity thing. And for a second, people like you and I get almost misinterpreted as them, not supporting us, but really it's just them kind of wrapping their head around a change.
Right. Yeah, yep. I ran into a buddy of mine the other day that I hadn't seen in a while, and we were just shooting the breeze for a few minutes, and he called this guy over that he was working with, and he's all, this is what I used to look like when I was in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and he's comparing your look.
To the look I have now.
How'd that make you feel?
That made me feel pretty good. It made me feel pretty good because my confidence level has just soared since being on this program. I wouldn't say that I've become cocky, but I'm much more sure of myself in social situations and things of that nature. Like when I go out and shoot pool, with my buddies, I'm the one that everybody's looking at. I'm the one that everybody's paying attention to in the bar. And which is cool.
Yeah, it's funny. Kind of touching back on some of the other stuff. I mean, it's you were, John, you were talking about crab in the bucket, and it's kind of weird. Sometimes I think that people just don't know how to react. They want to be supportive, but they're kind of jealous at the same time. And like you're saying, they're kind of trying to wrap their hands around it. And, that's Ron, that's when it's up to you to kind of, I keep going back to that one report that I wrote a little while ago talking about how things change and how people start reacting to you differently and how you kind of have to understand that. And you're not the only person that's seeing that. I mean, it's a common thread. Once you get a better look, I mean, you have to understand that the people that they don't know how to react to it. And then people that you don't know might assume other things if you're not careful. So, yeah. So it's like I say, it's just keep it's a recurring theme that keeps coming up.
Yeah, your physical presence changes how they are going to act, and then you also have to change the way you act slightly accordingly. Actually, you just need to do less. You just need to be, I don't know, Tristan said it well, you just need to be polite because your physical presence has its own sort of, it speaks on its own without you having to really do or say anything.
Right, right. When you're able to fill up that room just by walking into it because of your physical presence, you really don't need to be really boisterous and obnoxious anymore.
Yeah, and it backfires on you big time.
And yeah, then, and Brad, you brought up the crabs in a bucket thing. One of the other interesting points that anyone who's going through one of these changes is noticing is your change, the way you change, reflects on other people about themselves. So when they're looking at you, they don't just look at you and say, "Oh, Ron's done a really good job of changing his body. Congratulations." They look at you through a lens of, "What does this mean about me?" And they end up, and it's kind of an ironic thing, but as you're improving yourself and as you're showing them how to do it, basically like leading by example,
right?
They also can get very – some people can become spiteful or discouraged because they want to do it for themselves but don't have – you know, they haven't yet found the confidence to try it yet or whatever it is that's going on in their life. So it's hard for us to gauge. It's hard for you to really know how everyone around you reacts. Some people may just feel – they'll come up with an excuse. They're like, "Well, he could do it because of whatever reason, but I can't." So you can only do – the most you can do is what you have done, is just lead by example. Some people just can't follow it, and some people who are really caught up in their own sort of personal life may even try to pull you back, like, you know, say, "Well, you know, what do you do? You're skinny now. You're not a big guy." And those are the people that they don't – it doesn't happen often, but when those sort of people come up, I just tell people to insulate themselves from them because they're just – they're trying to make what you've done seem not so good just to protect their own emotions.
Yeah. Well, they have an investment in keeping you where you're at because that means that if you can change, then they can change. And if they're not willing to, then it just reflects where they're at versus where you're at, and that makes them uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's kind of an implied loserdom. I say this sometimes, but there's kind of an implied loserdom when they look at you. It's not that they want to be happy for you, but what really happens is that they start becoming more unhappy with them because you might have grown up in the same town, you're the same age, you know, and all this other stuff. But if you're surpassing them in any way, that must mean that they're either incapable or incompetent or any of the words like that are that. In some way that, you know, it's kind of an irrational fear that people have that they're just like, "Oh man, I must be a loser. If he can do it and I'm not there and he's passing me and we came from the same hometown, what's wrong with me?" And the fact of the matter is there might not be anything wrong. It just, they might not have the right tools and that might just be it. So,
right.
So that's pretty interesting. So what was it like? Okay, so you basically said that, you know, once you took that after picture, you were kind of like, "Wow."
Yeah.
You know, when it really clicked for you that you were like, "Man, this is good"? When did it click for you that you were like, "Man, I'm doing this"? I mean, was it like week three or something like that? It was like you could just feel it. You kind of getting this streak going. You know what I mean? When did that click?
Pretty early on, I pretty much through the whole contest. I mean, it sounds kind of weird that I'm saying this, but I knew almost from the start that I was going to win. I just had a feeling that I was going to win right from once I got started on the workouts, and I started seeing numbers change. I was like, I'm gonna win. You know, I just knew almost from the start that I was going to pull it off.
Yeah,
and I think that's what helped. Just having that confidence,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, belief in myself that I was going to run all the way to the end.
Yeah, you got some early results. That's why it's okay. Let's talk about some of your diet stuff, and then I'm going to ask you another question. But as far as diet, what were you doing?
I was eating less. I was fasting twice a week, and just trying to watch what I was eating on my eat days. You know, I have a real problem with like cookies and cake and donuts and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I made a deal with my girlfriend. I was like, okay, no more baked goods, no more baked goods till this thing's over. So on December 17th, we had like this huge brownie party.
Nice.
Yeah. I just kind of pigged out on all the things that I was missing for the 10 weeks. You know, I had brownies and cookies and cupcakes and all that kind of stuff. I just watched what I was doing and I just paid attention to not really what I was putting in my body, but just how much I was putting in. And,
right.
People just don't understand the whole fasting thing. They're stuck in the fallacy that it's bad for you. I mean, I still get it to this day. People just don't understand why they tell me that I'm starving myself. And I'm not really starving myself. I'm just taking a break from eating.
And have they looked at you?
They have. And one of the guys that gives me the hardest time about it, he's just poking sticks now, but. It's like, you did a good job. He says, you look really good, but I think what it is people just can't wrap their head around going without food for an entire 24 hours.
Which is not that long.
It really isn't that. It's really not. And it's kind of a nice break, to not have to think about what am I going to eat today?
Yeah. Did you find that it just freed up time in your day?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I was able to do more stuff. I was, and my time at the gym was strong. I think I'm actually stronger on days that I'm fasting at the gym than days that I go there and I'm eating.
Yeah. I have the same thing. I definitely have really good workouts, somewhere in the middle or the end of a fast. That's for sure. So tell me this, and this is something people keep, I keep hearing from. Were you actually surprised at how much time you spent thinking about preparing, going to get, eating, and sitting around with food?
Oh, absolutely. I was completely obsessed with food. And my whole life was just before everything was just, it was preparing. It was preparing meals, and it was doing this and doing that. It's like I'd have to start getting ready for work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I had to, I had to cook all my food for the day and get it all bagged up and ready to go. It was ridiculous. And then it's just so much nicer to just go, well, I'm just going to grab this and I'm going to make me a sandwich, and this is how I'm going to break my fast.
So you actually lost weight by eating just basically eating normal instead of eating obsessively.
Yeah. And it was a great change. It was a great relief to me when at first it was kind of hard to get started with the fasting. But after three or four of them are under your belt, it's like, this isn't really that big a deal. I can do this. And just being able to take that break and know that, I'm not going to eat today, and I'm going to be able to do all this other stuff. I'm still going to be able to get everything done that I need to get done, and it's not going to be any kind of adverse effects on my body at all. And you just go about your day, and you can accomplish so much more when you're not thinking about, well, let's see, it's this time, I'm kind of hungry, I think I'm going to stop at the 7-Eleven, or I'm going to stop and get me a cheeseburger somewhere, or things like that. It's just, you don't have to worry about it. And then your relationship with food changes.
All right. Well, talk about that for a bit.
Well, about that, it's just, before it was everybody eats because eating's a social thing, and you eat when you're bored, you eat when, you eat when you're tired. You just basically every chance you get, it seems like we're eating. In this society, and it's, you deserve this and you deserve that. What's funny is you see the some of the fast food commercials. We have this local place here that people are, it's just, they're just goofy ads about people that really don't do anything. And then they said, but you deserve this. So go out and get this food, you know, after doing some simple task, you know, I woke up and got my kids to school today. You deserve a shake, you know, things like that. And it's just funny to sit back and think about how people just justify, eating the way they eat, you know, and then you see people at the gym that are just, they're just busting their ass on the cardio equipment, you know, and then you see them across the street getting a chocolate milk and a donut, and they go, well, I deserve this because I just worked my ass off for an hour at the gym, you know, and it's just, my whole relationship has just changed. I eat, now to, you know, just to be fed. I don't eat for anything other than just, to be fed. I don't eat for pleasure or enjoyment. Food is still good. I enjoy eating good food, but
you're not self-medicating with it.
Right. I'm not medicating myself with it anymore. I'm eating because it's an eat day.
And before you did this, it sounded like you were following quite a bit of the nutrition rules from the bodybuilding industry. Do you find it a bit ironic that when you were following all the day's current rules, that's when it was the worst?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That was the biggest eye opener for me, was when I realized that the bodybuilding community, for lack of a better word, just doesn't know what the hell they're doing. As far as, you know, it works for them, but it only works for them because they're such a small.
They're the fringe.
Yeah, they're at the fringe. And they, you know, there was this thing the other night that somebody showed me, and this guy eats like 10,000 calories a day. How can you eat that much food? How can you seriously pack away that much food? And, you know, he's one of the big competitive bodybuilders and all that, but it's crazy that people are packing away that much food.
Yeah, the issue there also is that that's probably not an accurate article. It's just
right.
It's a story to catch people's attention. And I mean, look, we're even talking about it, and somebody may even try it. So I mean, even Pierre said he got up to eating 12 meals a day, trying to do the same thing, and he said all that happened to him was he got fat.
Yeah. When I was at my worst. Well, as far as my training, I was stuck at 220 pounds, and I was doing everything that I thought was the right thing to be doing to, you know, boost my metabolism and be a fat burning furnace, and I was just spinning my wheels. And that's the most ironic thing about the whole thing is that all this stuff that I was reading about and thinking that was the right thing to do was just getting me stuck and keeping me there. And
yeah, well, let me ask you this. Did you kind of, cause I mean, I kind of did this a while back when I realized how simple everything really was. Did you kind of just once, you know, maybe 2 weeks into it and you got some fasting, just started eating less and just said, you know what, I'm just going to do this. And did you kind of just laugh at yourself and just kind of chuckle and be like, oh man, I can't believe how simple a process this really is?
Yeah, I did. And then I posted the other day on the forum about a conversation I'd had with one of the people that I work with. And she didn't like my response. She's all, well, how do I lose weight? I'm like, eat less.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, that's the worst answer. Even though that's right, it's the answer no one wants.
Yeah, nobody wants that answer. And you know, she was talking about canceling her gym membership and firing, you know, she was working with a personal trainer and all of this stuff and starting to do Taibo classes and things like that. And I'm like, what are your goals? And she says, well, I just want to lose weight. And well, keep your gym membership and your trainer and just eat less. That's what it's all about.
And how did she respond to that?
She wasn't real happy about that. She's all, I don't, but you know, there's this and there's this and there's this. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. I can eat, I can eat donuts all day long. And so long as I'm in a calorie deficit by the end of the day, it really doesn't matter what I ate that day.
And so your personal transformation wasn't enough proof to her?
No, it wasn't.
Well, I mean,
they a lot of people now out at work, they come up and they ask me questions about what I did and how I did it. But when I tell them that I fast twice a week or three times a week, because that's what I was doing towards the end of the contest was three fasts a week, they're all, that's just not right. That can't be healthy.
And what did the people look like who were saying that to you?
Oh, they were round. They were in shape. They were just in a round shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yeah, that's, I think that is our biggest challenge right now is helping guys actually explain to other people what they're doing. Because I have a sneaky feeling that that's the ridicule that people get, because when they're just saying, look, man, I'm just keeping it simple. I'm doing this and doing this. And people are like, oh, that can't work. That doesn't sound healthy. Remember how we kind of talked about how people can use that healthy, like saying something's not healthy is saying something's like a scam. It's kind of like you're trying to, God, what's the word I'm looking for? Like discredit something without having any proof. You just say, oh, that's a scam. And people are like, oh shit, it must be a scam. Same thing with somebody saying, oh, that's not healthy. And then all of a sudden people get all defensive because it's not healthy.
I think part of it is their common sense will probably kick in at some point and they'll probably believe you, but they're a bit scared and a bit, even embarrassed or ashamed if that's all it ever was. So the one thing you can do is lead by example. You don't even need to tell them what you ate less. You'd be like, oh, you know, I just, you know, been working out and, you know, looking at how I've been eating. And maybe you've got to almost meet them at – you almost have to meet them at a vague middle ground. Eating less – like I've said that to people all the time, and they just can't handle that answer. You almost have to bring them into it a little slower, and confronting them with the eat less, even though to you and I mean, that's just all we did, so it doesn't sound confrontational. To them, that's about as confrontational as we could get, and they may shy away from that kind of confrontation. So what you could do is, well, hey, why don't you come with me for a workout or something, if it's someone you even want to spend any time with at all. And then after that, it could, you know, you almost have to introduce them to your lifestyle to some degree without labeling it eat less or anything like that. And let them sort of discover it sort of for themselves, if they're suggestible at all. And then maybe that way they can deal with the embarrassment of realizing, oh, my God, it really was just less. But, again, the other thing is not everyone can be reached, and not everyone that can be reached at the moment this conversation happens is in a reachable state. You know what I mean? So you have to really massage. The thing is we just can't fix everybody.
Right.
Right, right.
Well, you could do a shock and awe. I was just thinking about this. I mean, if somebody asks you what you did, you could say, oh man, you wouldn't believe this. I ate like 10 meals a day and I was working out like 3 hours a day for like seven days a week. And man, I wasn't getting much sleep and I was on this supplement and I was spending like $400 a month on supplements. And they'll be like, holy shit, is that right? And I'm like, no, man, I just ate less.
I don't know. They'd probably feel even more like a fool if you did that to them.
Yeah, they'd be like, nah, man, I just ate less, dude. Really? Come on. You don't believe that, do you? Yeah, that would be funny.
Well, it's tricky because these situations get to the root of a person's personal lie, what's really going on in their life. Like that's really hard to that a lot of them aren't, even though, like, logically they could probably reason out that eating less must have – of course that worked. It's just – the message has to be delivered so delicately. It's really difficult to tiptoe around people like that.
Yeah, I think people just have a hard time with the fact that they think they're not going to be able to eat less.
Oh, they've already made up in their mind they can't do it. So that's not even an answer they'll accept.
Yeah, they're not looking at that. They're, you know, they want to do they want somebody else to tell them what to do, and they want it written down. They want a book that says, you know, eat apples.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But eat them specifically, specific order and all that stuff.
Yeah, they want something laid out, and they want something and then that way, if they have this diet, I tried the Zone diet, it just didn't work for me. Well, it didn't work because they didn't eat less.
Well, they want a complex diet, so they have something to point at as the thing that failed them.
Right, right. That, so they have an out, so that they can bail on the situation and explain it away.
Well, I think the big thing is because they're not there, they must think people think the answer is a lot more complicated than what it really is. So that's, you know, and it kind of makes you feel better. It's like, oh, I just don't have this thing figured out. That's all it is. It's something really complicated I don't have figured out. But if it's something really simple, then it makes people feel even worse. They can't accept the fact that it's a simple answer that
right.
they can't get handled. So, yeah, that's pretty much. Well, Ron, we're about to wrap up, but give us kind of what would you say to other guys, you know, who are looking to get in shape or whatever, change their bodies, and, you know, what have you learned from all this? What kind of insights can you give them just overall? I mean, you won, so.
I think the biggest thing that I can offer is you gotta have a goal, you know, that's really specific, and you've got to realize that it's all about you. You are the only one that can make it happen. You know, there's people around you that can offer support, and you need that, but in the end, it's really just about you. And it's what you're willing to, and the price, you know, and if you're willing to pay the price for what you want, and that can be with anything in life, you know, whether it's being in shape and having a good AAI score, or you're doing the job of your dreams or whatever it is, you know, it's up to you to be willing to pay the price to go after that dream, and don't let anybody tell you that it's not going to happen for you and it's not possible for you, because whatever you decide to do is completely doable for you.
Mm. Yeah. Strong words. John, you got anything to add or you want to ask?
No, that was great. That kind of reminds me of a quote. I don't know if I'll get it quite right. It's that successful people are willing to do the things that unsuccessful people aren't willing to do. And that's basically what Ron just said.
Right. Well, here's another way of looking at that is that successful, there's, you know, you can have two people that do the exact same job, but they do it in different ways. Successful people do things in certain ways, you know, and you've got to know what those ways are. And it's just about doing, and really the way to do it is to do the very best job that you can do in whatever you're doing every single day in every moment. No matter what it is, you give it your absolute best, and you'll be successful.
So you just live it.
Yeah, you've got to live it. And this whole thing has just been a complete lifestyle change for me. This is not a workout plan. This is my new life.
Right, but it's not as the best part is it's not as complicated as the life you had.
No, it's not.
That's hilarious. Well, Ron, I really appreciate you taking time talking to us today, man.
Absolutely,
man. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to go, but we will talk to you later, man.
All right, take care, guys.
All right. Said, here's Ron. All right, guys, and we're back. Now, since in the whole spirit of what this this teleseminar and event on Wednesday is going to be, specifically since it's about muscle building, one of the things that we wanted to go ahead and cover right off the bat was the fact that, you know, Ron, if you listened in, Ron was talking about every time he hit the gym, he was lifting 100% all out. And I don't think a lot of guys are really understanding what that means or why that is. And there's some confusion there. And we'll go into this a lot deeper, like I say, in the teleseminar. But I know John wants to cover a couple things with you really quickly.
Yeah, well, with training, when I write out 5 reps or 8 reps or 13 reps, that doesn't mean just pick any random weight and push it 5 times. That means pick a weight that you can only get 5 reps with. And also, given the time, the rest intervals, the, you know, 60 seconds, 120, whatever it is, I'm not talking about 130 if it says 120. I mean 120 right on the button. So those are very specific things that should totally change the way the workout feels. So if you're not lifting, any workout is when it's written out, is designed for you to be pushing as hard as possible. It's not designed for you to be kind of going 80% of it or 60% of your ability. So, I mean, no workout's going to work if you're not pushing that hard. I mean, that's the inherent assumption in any workout is that, you know, when it says 13 reps, whoever wrote that workout's assuming you can't do 14. They're assuming you're going to get stuck at the 13th rep.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we cover weight loss a lot in this podcast because it's, it's probably one of the more prevalent issues in society today. Actually, I would say probably one of the most prevalent issues and one of the most confusing. But muscle building is just as confusing as well. And, you know, we really talk about and really beat down the whole calories in, calories out thing with weight loss, but we really haven't beat in the reality of building muscle and the stimulus. I mean, that stimulus for weight loss is somehow, some way, you have to figure out, without driving yourself crazy, how to either eat less or there has to be a deficit somehow, some way. However you create it, it's up to you. We got some good ideas of how you can do it, but however you figure out to do it, you know, that's great.
But it has to be a deficit.
There is no arguing the physics of that.
And then, right. On the muscle building side, you got to do more work.
Right.
You have to do more work, and you have to do, and it has to be more intense, and you have to keep, and you have to progress. It always has to be more.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing where we're sitting at now is just kind of as a rule of thumb, and if you can't think about it any other way, is that you should aim to lift more next week than you did this week.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, you know, and for me, I do some things that are a little bit differently than some other guys do. But one of the reasons I do it, like I do the AI workouts, but I do some big body stuff to warm up with. But I always, even if I'm not doing that, even if I'm doing like chest presses or something like that, I will always at the end go, like say if they're fives or whatever. And like five reps of fives, it's like every single time I can't help it. I'm like, all right, where am I at this week? You know, whenever there's fives, like reps of fives, I'm like, all right, where am I at this week? I'm all right. Let's see if I can get you know 110s this week, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm always cognizant of where I am as far as what I'm lifting and if it's going up or not.
Yeah, and the point is that's why the workouts keep changing. You can't just pick the five rep range and do it forever. Like you have to be in and out of different rep ranges because scientifically we haven't figured out exactly what's happening, but we know you just can't stick out one rep range forever. You do have to bounce in and out of various rep ranges. So you have to build your eight rep strength, your 12 rep strength, your five rep strength. If we do an actual pure just power program, then you're doing your three rep strength. You know, all of these different reps. So that's why the program kind of goes all over the place and you're in and out of these different rep ranges because it seems that people get exhausted in one rep range for too long. Right. But it doesn't mean you're not getting stronger in all the rep ranges. The idea is you want your strength in all those ranges to go up.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, when you've got your program in front of you, however you have it, whether you choose ours, I mean, because it's, you know, already there and you don't have to try to reinvent the wheel, or even if you have a good idea of what you're working with and just tweaking it. I mean, the whole goal is, you know, writing down what weights you're using. And then the next time you revisit that workout or that specific, you know, set range that you have, set and rep range, that next time you do it, the weights you're using, barring any injury, are going to be more than you did.
Either more weight or more sets or more reps. Something else, something has to go.
Right.
Something has to go up. And the programs are designed that way. They're designed to force you to go up.
Yep.
But you can't just purely rely on sets and reps increasing. You have to eventually use more weight too.
Right.
So that's the overall theme of more. So with weight loss, the overall theme is less calories, and with muscle building, the overall theme is more work.
Right. Yeah. And work is, like I said, it's defined in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of different ways to do it. So work is force times distance. So you're either using more force or you're moving more weight, more distance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all it is.
Right. And since you can't, there's going to be a practical and physiological limit to both. Like obviously we can't just keep doing more and more weight because that means, you know, 15 years later, how come we're not all bench pressing 1,000 pounds? So that's where the distance comes in. You have to do more sets and more reps. And then then periodization comes in because you'll, in some respects, you'll neuromuscularly and psychologically kind of tap out on doing any one particular rep scheme or set scheme for much more than 3 or 4 weeks. You'll just become burnt out and exhausted, and then you just won't be able to do it anymore. So that's why that programs get periodized. That's why, like, weight training programs kind of get complex, because otherwise, why wouldn't we just go in and do the same six lifts, you know, for the same number of reps for as many years as you can handle it? But people just burn out on that.
Well, the other thing, I would say for most guys, just a generic program where the reps and sets and stuff remain the same would probably be all right, because they're not really training. They're just, they hit the gym like once a week. You know, they just try to fit it in sometime. And so they really never get to that point where they need that type of stuff. But I mean, if you have a true goal of changing, of really changing your body, and, you know, you're hitting the weights, you know, 3-4 times a week, I mean, yeah, that's when this stuff's going to come into play. I can vouch for that. It comes into play.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. It's the difference. It's like what Ron said. It's the difference between training and working out. Like, you can go to the gym and build up a sweat and push some weights around and stuff. But if you don't have a structured plan where the next day builds from the last day and there's a reason for it, you don't really know if you're forcing your muscles into an adaptation that's getting them anywhere beyond where they just are right now.
Yeah. I mean, my kind of thing is that this sounds weird, and it won't happen. Like, you probably won't notice it like all the time, but if you're not getting stronger just in daily life activities, then something's wrong. For instance, like, we were it snowed around here, which it seems like it hardly ever does, but it snowed a couple times around here. We went sledding, and I was going down the hill, and, you know, I was on my back on one of these little rocket things, and, you know, I hit something, man, and I bounced out of the sled, and it happened more than once, but I landed on my feet and just started running, and I could tell as soon as I hit, when my legs absorbed it, I was like, yeah, I know if I hadn't been lifting, no way that would happen. You know, I mean, you could just.
Oh, so you can kind of, I don't know, you just sort of notice that you're in better muscular condition than you were before.
Yeah. Or like if you're like another example, if you're like walking, and you like slip or something, and you like catch yourself with your leg, you know how you do that sometimes, and you just, and you just kind of think to yourself, you're like, man, yeah. I know I can remember a time where that would have really messed me up pretty bad, but it just feels right. So that's what I mean. Just regular stuff, like going out to get firewood, you know, like we burn fire.
That slipping is an interesting example, because it's weight training. I mean, I don't know that anybody we regularly communicate with would be in this category, but in advanced age, when people get really old, weight training is the number one thing for preventing falls.
Yeah.
Like a fall and a hip break is like 80% fatal, which is it's one of the things that a lot of people die from, is just breaking a hip. And so the best treatment for that is weight training.
Yeah.
Proactively. You have to, you know, not afterwards.
Sure. And you're not even saying you're saying preventing the fall, not, you know.
No. Preventing the fall, because the weight training does two things. It strengthens the muscles, the bones become denser, and people become better balanced.
Right.
So even if they do slip, they may catch themselves without actually falling all the way to the ground, sort of thing.
Right. So you're not even talking about the fact that realistically that, you know, because their bone density holds a little bit better and doesn't deteriorate as bad, that maybe it won't break. You're talking about the fact that they won't fall. Right.
Yeah. There's a less chance of them falling. And yeah. So, it's obviously, it's not applicable for you or probably anybody listening right now, but in general, it's one of the reasons why we should be training for our whole life.
Right. Yeah, I notice, like I say, I've been noticing just little things like that. Little things where I'll like go get a big thing of firewood and put it in this big Tupperware container and like bring it in the house, and it's you know, it's not bothering me. Like you can feel the weight. The weight doesn't, I'm not going to say it doesn't change, but it's, you just notice that you're handling it a little bit better, so to say.
Yeah.
It's
sure.
It's like, all right, well, yeah, this, yeah, I might have thrown a back out picking this up the other day, but this, I mean, it's still heavy, don't get me wrong, but I'm able to, like, move it around and kind of go through the door without feeling like I'm going to blow out a shoulder or something, or it's strange. So yeah, that's one of the things we kind of wanted to get across. We really want to start getting into the nuts and bolts of weight training and building muscle. Because, like I say, we've been going down the weight loss path for so long that we've been neglecting this side of it, and the raw, I don't kind of call it raw, but I guess the basic overall premise of it. So, like I say, just like weight loss is calories in versus calories out, weight training is progressive resistance training, which means you have to keep lifting more and more and more and more and more eventually.
Mm-hmm. So, well, your analogy, and I think it was the last podcast, you said it best, like compared to where you were in high school versus now. I mean, that's, you know, that's a lot of years later, but that's just so much more.
Sure. And you know, the funny thing about it is it actually didn't take that long to get to where I was. It's like I would kind of go up a little bit, and then I wouldn't work out that much. And, you know, I would be able to bounce back to those spots. And, you know, it didn't take me that long from when I kind of started back up pretty hardcore about 9 months ago to getting where I am now. It really, in a grand scheme of things, did not take that long. I probably went from square one, like going into the gym, incline dumbbell presses or whatever, like I might have been doing 45s, right? And then just progressively, now I'm up to like 102s or whatever. Like I said, they're the biggest ones. Mm-hmm. But it didn't take that long. I mean, it was just more or less catching back up to where part of me was at one time. And this kind of, I don't know, at one point it was kind of like a contest with myself to see if I could get there. Because I knew, I was like, dude, that there are no more dumbbells that are heavier than this. So so kind of all my lifts, I know it sounds bad, but kind of all my lifts that are dumbbell-based revolve around that.
Getting to the end of the rack?
Getting to the end of the rack, right. Now, for some gyms and clubs, they're probably not going to be realistic because they got 150-pound dumbbells, and I don't think I'll ever be able to curl that. But
for us, it's getting to the heavy rack.
Right.
So there's the one rack ends at, I don't know, 95s, and then the other rack starts at 100.
Right, yep.
So if we're doing all our pressing and rowing in the 100 and up rack, that's, you know, that's good. And that's kind of where we are, right? So, like, my one partner's – he's almost off of that one too.
Yeah.
So, yep. But anyways, and that's where you got to get to. The whole point of this is to be on that rack,
mm-hmm.
And over there.
Yeah, this is really funny. I can't believe I'm like admitting this stuff, but I remember. I mean, I know it's not me. I know it's not just me. I know it's every other. I'm not gonna say I know it's every other guy, but for me, for like every lift, there's like a weight that if you can't lift that weight, then you're a wimp, right? Like, you have this in your mind. So, like, for me, on like in any type of incline bench press, it was 135. 135, if you can't put a plate on each side, a 45 on each side, that's like the limit.
Oh yeah, that's like gym culture. Like, that's like, if you can't do a plate, you don't even go to the bar. You go do dumbbells or somewhere where you can hide it, or you use machines, right, until you can finally get a plate on there.
Yeah, I mean, and so that was like the first – for me, I mean, I'm being honest. That was like the first thing I was like – because, I remember in college or whatever, me and my buddy Brian, we might have been doing like 25s. And everybody's in college, so most of the people in there are small, so you don't feel that bad. But, you know, then when you go to a regular like commercial gym or something, you're like, oh, wow, okay, so I got to step my game up because, you know, I'm kind of looking kind of scrawny here with these dudes. And that was fine. I mean, that's just the way I was thinking. But that thinking for me also made me get into like the I guess the realms of where I wanted to be. So it went from mine always go in plates for mm-hmm. when it comes to any type of pushing exercises. So like it's always the goals are always either 45-pound plates or 25-pound plates. So it's like I never. Like let's say for like if I'm going to do some bench work or whatever, right? It would always be the first thing would be, okay, well, I need to get to 135, so I need to get to two plates, or one plate on each side. And so then when I get there, the next goal is I need to get to a 20
plates and quarters.
A 25 on each side.
So yeah, that's 185. Then it's plates and then it's two plates. It's 225. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how it goes. Yeah. So it goes. Yeah. It goes up like that. That's the way I always look at it. I've never been satisfied with the.
You want to go up by fives and tens and twos and two and a halves.
Yeah, that's like not a goal for me. But I mean, that's
no, it's not a goal, but it's in the pattern. That now, getting back to our concept of doing more, it's absolutely people get caught in the rut of of only going up by huge plate. Like you can measure your progress by like now I'm in the two plate range, like, you know, two plates a side or whatever. But to get there, you have to go up by 2.5s and 5s. Like you have, like each workout, a lot of guys get into the rut of just throwing two plates on there when they could have thrown two plates and a 20 and a 5 or and a 2.5. And then a couple weeks later, once they're normalized to doing that, they can throw another 2.5 on, and then it won't be long until they have quarters. But guys don't think that way. A lot of guys just throw the two big plates on, and then just they just go with that. So some guys do that for years, and they just get really, really good at just benching that, you know, 225, and they don't even think, well, it could have been 230 the whole time, or it could have been 235 the whole time. And they don't think at all to try to progress. So that's the concept of progressive resistance. That's the only way you get to those bigger plates. You have to keep going up by little bits every time.
Yeah, I go up by 5s and 10s all the time. I don't mess with 2.5s because I don't even know if there's any there. And they look too much like 5s to me, I think, anyway. So I just don't mess with them. But
we call them cookies.
Yeah, I mean, I would if I like saw them, but I don't think they have any. So I typically go up by 5s and.
We even have different size collars, like heavy and lighter collars.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So there's certain like really thick powerlifting collars that like they themselves weigh 2 or 3 pounds each. Mm-hmm. So like when you're lifting, you know, heavier weights, you have to even account for those.
Sure.
Like just the bigger collars can make the lift make it a different lift.
Sure. No, I mean that makes sense. I mean, but if you guys are listening, this is kind of funny because you know John's got all the gym lingo down or whatever, and you know he's like, oh, I got the dimes and I got the quarters, and I'm like, yeah, like a 25 and a 45. I'm like regular dude, and he's like, oh, gym lingo dude.
Yeah, sorry, that's the powerlifting stuff.
Right.
And anything smaller than a plate, we just call it change. or sorry, anything smaller than a 25 is change.
That's
so tens, fives, and the 2.5s are change.
That's funny.
Yeah,
I can't imagine looking at a guy in my gym like, dude, can you give me some change? And be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Well, it's like, what do you got there? It's like, I don't know, like 200 and change.
Right.
Or if you've got, or the littlest, the little 2.5s, we just call them cookies.
Right.
Right. And then that's just all powerlifting lingo. But, and you know, they're really specific because those guys, like their point is to just lift more and more and more. And they know that you can't just throw another plate on there. They know that you got to go up in tiny little increments, but you have to be doing it all the time. So that's why those little plates exist. That's the only way you progress. When you're lifting that heavy, if a bird flew along and landed on the bar, that might be too much. Like once you've got the exact weight you can handle, you can't even do like one more pound. Like that's how close to your max you'd be training on some of these lifts. So that's why you have to know if one collar weighs more than the other, because it could be the difference between getting the lift and not getting the lift.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. I know one of the things that's kind of your pet peeves, and I want to bring this up too. I mean, we're talking about going up and up and up as far as your lifts on a progressive basis, but that doesn't mean putting so much on the bar that you could get somebody to come spot you and they're doing all the work for you. That doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. When we trained with the power team, no one was allowed to touch the bar. Like, no one's hands are on the bar ever besides your own. Like, you can ask to help them unrack it for you.
Right.
But no one touches it. Same with squatting, same with anything. No one touches it. It's all you. I mean, you never want to get used to training with other people touching the bar.
Right.
Because then psychologically you don't believe that you're lifting it without them touching it.
Hmm.
And you should never struggle under a rep such that the rep pauses halfway through. Like, you've got to get the whole thing all the way through.
Right.
And you also never want to be in a position where the rep itself takes more than – it should be one fluid push. It should never be like a 4 or 5 second – gutting it out, that's also too heavy. Because none of those styles of reps are producing the adaptation you want. Like, you want to flow through the set. Really, really heavy reps, like in the 5-rep range and 3-rep, those can be slow reps, but you don't want them ever coming back, like pausing halfway through, or you don't want to be distorting your body underneath any of those reps. You want to come up in a fluid motion, even if that motion's kind of slow.
Right.
But there's a limit to how slow it can be. Like if you know, I don't care if it's a deadlift, squat, or bench press, if that lift itself takes much more than a second or two to complete, then it's too much.
Right. So basically what you're saying is that because it's basically kind of an all out and you're maybe torquing or doing this or doing that, not only are you, you know, kind of losing form, but also you're not getting
adaptation you're after.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I didn't know.
And also the slowest reps are the absolute heaviest reps. Now, if you're competing in powerlifting, that one rep may actually, well, by definition, that one rep will be slow.
Sure.
It'll be the slowest thing you can do without it stopping.
Right.
By definition, because the heaviest weight you can move will move at the slowest rate you can push it.
Sure.
And if you can push it too quickly, then it's not heavy enough. You can still put more weight. So when you see like a guy competing, he may, on his very heaviest lift that he can actually manage, it'll move slow. Like the heaviest squat I ever did, I was training with the team, and actually one of the girls on the team, she actually won like number one lifter in Canada anyways. She was forcing me to do my max on squat, which I really didn't want to do. And that one squat took me 5 seconds mm-hmm. from bottom to top. And that's like, it was horrible. And I'd never want to do that again. And I'm like, no, this isn't for me. I'm never going to compete. Like, this is stupid. I didn't mind training the way you train to get that strong, but I didn't like the one exertion, one rep max lift felt like awful.
Yeah. What type of weight are you talking?
Yeah, I think I had like 450-ish on there.
Right.
So it's like nothing compared to what the guys I trained with.
Right.
But I mean, you know, and that was uncomfortable as hell.
Right.
Like I felt terrible after it. And then same thing, like I went through a phase where I was testing all my maxes. So I did a max deadlift too. Same thing. It took like 5 seconds to get the thing from bottom to top. And it was the worst. Like, you know, my hands and feet went numb. I was seeing stars and stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. and there's a big difference between that, like that one, doing your one single rep versus doing a set of three. Even though three is very close, it's a totally different feeling.
Sure.
And I mean, I don't recommend doing that one single rep unless you're competing. I don't know if the word is high risk, but it's pretty intense for no real reason. So I wouldn't be doing one rep lifts unless you're competing. Like, you could do them on like, I don't know. You know, I just wouldn't do them. They're just so uncomfortable.
Right. Well, I mean, with number two, you probably, what's the chance of you actually having somebody around that is going to be able to know if, you know what I'm saying, be able to spot you the right way and actually know if you're doing something wrong. Because, I mean, the reason we're talking about – go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I'm just going to say those – yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, first of all, if your form's not like bang on the money, you never want to be under that kind of weight.
Yeah.
Because if you do that one single rep sloppy, you could be out of commission for months.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me. I was reading something the other day. I think it was on Bally's blog. I think I went over there to see what he was up to, and they said it was like a study out, and this kind of relates to this saying that if you were doing like chest flies before you're doing chest presses, that you'd be more likely to injure yourself because you've conditioned your body in that short amount of time to go through that certain range of motion where it puts your shoulders when you're pressing. In a different, so maybe your elbows flare out even more or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess you just need to be very conscious of it.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. As soon as I read it, I was like, that kind of makes sense, man. But it's kind of the same thing, you know. It's the reason we wanted to talk about this, not only because of, you know, Ron stuff, but you know, I don't see anybody pushing the gym at all. You know, and I'm not talking about making a bunch of noise and racket and stuff like that, but you know, most people literally, if they're lifting a weight, they could let the weight leave their hands.
I guess it's gym to gym. We've got some pretty serious guys at our gym, but there's, you know, for every guy who's in there like really paying attention and actually is following a program, I'd say for every one of those, there's probably six or seven. For every one of those, there's like six or seven guys who are just sort of pushing stuff around but don't really know what they're doing.
Sure. So going into that, let's talk about the goals and talk about Ron. Because Ron, it was funny because as soon as he decided to do the contest, he decided he was going to win, which I thought was interesting. And then the second thing that he said that he did, and we're kind of going back to lifting 100% all out, is he did the one thing that nobody else did in the contest that we've interviewed, and that is – he just basically did everything the way it was supposed to be done, did not change anything, took the diet and nutrition advice bang on, did the program bang on, did not change a thing, and decided he was going to win, and you know, got some good social rapport support, because he basically told people, he said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm basically going to win, and I just need you to support me on this. And you listen, and he was talking about his – was it his girlfriend? I think his girlfriend, right?
Yeah, his girlfriend.
His girlfriend, totally supportive, like, you know, whatever you need to do. I know this is important to you or whatever. You know, it's 10 weeks.
He mentioned that he cut out, you know, the one thing he needed to help with from her was cutting out his sweets, like baked goods.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went along with that. And then he did eat, stop, eat. I mean, all he did was restrict calories. He knew all he had to do was be in a calorie restriction. And he used eat, stop, eat to help with that. And then as far as training goes, he just did the program, like he said, and he did it with 100% effort each workout. And that's it.
Yep.
That's all anyone was supposed to do. Everyone's going to feel twinges of trying more, but I mean, you got to at least get going on the program before you can decide if you can fit more.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And do it at 100%, you know, with the weights that you're supposed to be using. You know, it's.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be a tendency to want to try to do more stuff, but then that if trying to add more things in reduces your ability to do all of it at 100% intensity, then you're shortchanging yourself.
Yeah, that's why we basically backed off on our recommendation of any type of cardio. And in the next, we talked about this a week or so ago. In the next incarnation of Adonis, probably Adonis 2.1 or whatever, that we do kind of a rehash. We're pulling out all the interval training and all that stuff, just because this is the same type of mentality. I mean, like I say, we're adapting based on. The feedback we're getting and how people are getting results and more importantly, why people aren't getting results. And this trying to do more than what's specified is probably, it's kind of backwards. It seems backwards. People aren't trying to do more weight. They're trying to do more
stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Just stuff. I mean, it's the difference between doing what's there at 100% or doing what's there plus five more things, all of it at 50%.
Right.
Like it's the idea is to do everything that's there 100%. And then if you still feel like you can do more or, if, you know, feel like you want to do a little bit more, maybe add in one of the specializations, one of the muscle groups special, but you have to do those at 100% too. They're not designed to be done half-assed. They're designed to be done all out or not at all. To get anything out of them.
Yeah, and then
you know,
and then the next,
and then if you can, and then if that works, if that feels good, and you know, some people added in one of the workouts from the burn, the whole body circuits. Yeah, so you have to do them 100%. The point isn't to just kind of throw it in there and hack your way through it at half intensity.
Right. I mean, you got to remember, man, our whole thing with working out is not to burn calories. It's to condition and grow muscle, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you're trying to do more in the attempt to burn calories, I mean, we've already proven time and time again that not only is it unnecessary, but it's counterproductive. So
now that doesn't mean don't be active every day. We're already assuming you have some level of activity. Like if you have a sedentary job, you better go for some kind of walk or something every day. But I mean, that's just general health. But it doesn't need to be whole body circuits. It doesn't need to be high intensity interval training. Like you don't need to do that kind of stuff every day. What you need to do is just get up and move around just for the sake of your general health.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but on top of that, the purposeful workout is purely for body, like what we consider body shaping, sculpting, and building in a particular pattern.
Right. Yep. Yep. That's exactly the thing. So like I say, I mean, this is why we like getting feedback and talking to you guys and stuff like that, because it just helps us look at things. Because, I mean, honestly, people are different, and with as many people that are actually doing, you know, our workouts and our programs and using our systems and stuff like that, it gives us a really, really, really big group of people that we can spot trends. And these are the trends. You know, the number one trend for weight loss is basically – you know, avoiding everything except for what is really what you need to pay attention to at the end of the day, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it's I'm not going to say it's funny, because it's not funny, but it's very repetitive and almost heart-wrenching you know, every time we get a question, it's somebody says, so what you're really saying is all I have to do is eat less than I'm eating now? Or so it really is only about calories in and calories out? All this other stuff, you know, doesn't matter? And so on the weight loss side, that part is kind of wrenching to us. It's like, yes, man, that's the main mechanism. You know, however you figure out to do it, there's lots of ways to do it. You figure it out, and that's what you do. And then same thing with the muscle. Now we're getting into the muscle building side, and the overriding theme that you need to go to the gym with is I gotta get stronger.
Yeah. Progressive. Well, it's more stronger and more
stronger.
Progressive resistance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And so it's like I say, just listening to Ron. I mean, if you know, customers and stuff can see his. I mean, you've seen some of his pictures, but they can interact with him in the forum and stuff and see. You know, I mean, he's a cool guy, no doubt about that. But it's cool watching what happened to him. You know, because he changed.
You know, and by the way, of course he changed. He won the contest. I put a note out in the forum for the contest winners if they want to help with the coaching calls for the next contest, and Ron and Jason already said yes. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there you go. I mean, you get – not only you get us barking at you, but you get some other guys who've been there, done that, walked in your shoes, and, you know, they could tell you exactly what they went through. And
yeah.
And the same thing is that every single one of us, as a basic overriding theme, I mean, that's going to be me, that's going to be you, that's going to be Pelon, that's going to be all the guys that have won, you know, people that are getting results. I mean, we're basically following, other than doing the lifting systems that you've created, we're basically following all the same advice, steps, and stuff like that. And every single one of us, no matter – and the best part about it is no matter where they are, no matter where they started, just following the same basic themes and ideas are getting results, which is amazing to me. So.
Oh. I don't find it all that amazing.
I do because it's so simple.
Well, to me it makes sense. To me I can't see how it could go any other way.
Well, you're the expert. We're regular Joes, dude.
Well, okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, you got to remember we've been, you know, I mean, hell, I still get lost when I go look at something. I have to pry myself away from Google when I'm like reading stuff on health. I'm like, really? Is that true? So then I go Google it and see if it's true. And then somebody says it's true. Somebody else says it's not true. And then you go, really? Is that true?
And then you call me and then we start talking about it.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, dude. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about all this hormones, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. No. I mean, I'm sure when we get into muscle building and teleseminar or whatever, we'll talk about testosterone and growth hormone and all this.
Put it this way. There is no end with this industry. There is no end to the amount of useless stuff you can read about. But knowing any more about it is, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's like the amount you need to know is just tiny compared to the amount you can find out.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So,
like, you don't need a physiology degree or a nutrition degree to know how to lose weight, which is readily apparent when you go to a nutrition department and see half the professors are fat.
Yeah, you said it on your blog. That's pretty funny.
No, yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, why would I? I didn't even think about that till I was done school. I'm like, wait a minute. Those guys aren't even in shape. What the hell could they teach us?
Yeah. So knowledge of a specific field doesn't necessarily preclude, you know,
the ability to apply the knowledge.
Right. Yeah.
And then the specificity of the knowledge is something else altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things we'll get talking about too, just to kind of give you a little preview of what's coming up in the teleseminar on Wednesday. Again, you'll want to go to number eight. Pounds as in LBS, leanmass.com. Check out the video with Brad Pelon. And, I mean, we're going to go into a lot of this stuff. These guys are going to kind of pile through research, and we'll go over, again, you know, some of the misconceptions that people get when just quoting through abstracts. Again, we've already proven how you can take one research study and actually get two competing and opposite claims out of the same study when we did the one on cardio. So, we'll kind of attack that, and we'll attack basically talking about how you really can't make claims unless you look at the whole body of research on the subject. I know John's really, really keen into that. What are some of the other stuff that you – I mean, obviously we talk about water. That's always key. Cell volumization, which
– Well, and the overall thing is we're going to talk about when does your BS radar go off.
Right. Well, that'll
be – And that because of the way the popular sort of media in this area is set up, people's BS radars aren't calibrated properly anymore.
Right.
So that's going to – actually, me and Pilon were talking about, that's going to be the number one thing about this. It's – we're going to try to show people that what they think is reasonable isn't reasonable.
Right.
And what is reasonable is something they wouldn't have considered.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what we're going to get to with it.
Yeah.
So I guess while we're wrapping up here, what about transformation contest announcements and stuff to do?
Yep. Starts March 1st. Basically, that'll be next Monday. So basically, it'll be this podcast. We'll do a podcast next week basically announcing and kind of talking about the podcast – or excuse me, talking about the transformation contest, kind of giving everybody a heads up of what they need to do. And how to get in and all that type of jazz. Basically, as of now, yes, you do need to be a customer of ours to do that. But that just only makes sense because, I mean, if you want help and you want to get in the forums and get all the specific help, I mean, that just makes sense. It's just going to help you out. So I don't think – is there anything else that we wanted to talk about? I know we kind of wanted to talk about goals and stuff, but we really talk about that a lot. And
yeah, we kind of beat that to death. I guess the only other thing is if you're in the contest we're going to be – like Brad said, we're going to be doing coaching calls every 2 weeks throughout the whole contest, and we'll have other guys on helping out too. So that's part of the reason you got to be a customer to even be involved.
Yeah, I mean there's – like I said, we never sell our time, but you know there's got to be a certain level of commitment from you guys, and putting your checkbook into it signifies commitment for us. So that's what makes it worth it. So. All right, you got anything else?
No, man, that's pretty good.
Cool, man. Well, like I say, definitely check out 8 lbs leanmass.com, 8 lbs leanmass.com. Check out that video that Pilon put up. Try to guess what's going on. Try to guess the loophole that we're talking about here. And definitely register for the teleseminar. It'll be really good. I think you'll get a lot out of it. And for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and this is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.